and trying to get through my bat mitzvah lessons. And that's not an age thing at all. When I was young, I wanted to be a rabbi. Didn't even realize it was an option, not an option. It was just a dream I had, which I always, my favorite number is 3080, because I love this place. But we did celebrate together 10th anniversary. It wasn't a very positive experience during one of the sessions, to say the least. But I have to say, it was a positive experience for me. That was the day I started putting on tefillin for the first time and knew this is what I'm going to do. And then, as we said, there have been 4 conferences, but the other 2 have only been with women. And this is fantastic that we could celebrate together. Support each other through our joys, through our sadness, through our challenges. I don't want to say struggles, they're challenges. Just a little dip. And many of you who have come to the other conferences know that I've co-chaired them with one of my best friends, Alana Garber, who we keep in our prayers at this time, who was just diagnosed with lymphoma on Friday. She was supposed to sit on a panel. I could... Harab Ilana Chaya Bat Sarah Esther, I think. I could look it up for sure. My next introduction, I'll give it to you. Rachel Esther. And I've been in touch with her. We keep her in our prayers. But that's the great thing about the Rabbinical Assembly, that we're all here for each other. Seriously. I've had phone calls from people, colleagues who I don't always get to speak to. If I hear something happens in their community, I'll text message them and see how they're doing. And it's really great to see everybody here. Now, we didn't all go to JTS, but those of us who did go to JTS, I know that sometimes there's this little bit of anxiety, possibly. Maybe I'm passing it along to somebody else, I don't know. But there might be some thoughts that we might come back to that we had when we were here. I think the only new thing in this cafeteria is this beautiful podium. It's some color. I think it was a dirty brown when I was here. But one of the things I could tell you that in the seminary in 1990 through 99 when I was here in List College and then rabbinical school, I could tell you I led probably one service upstairs. It was Yom HaShoah. And why? You didn't have to use any new stuff. I did one Torah reading because that's what I had to do. And I opened my mouth, that's for sure. But I never opened my mouth before singing because I was way too intimidated.
Well, every chanter never tied her tzitzit knot.
Was sing. So I put my little person out there. Where is she? The one empty chair is the person who was supposed to help me sing. Oh, she's over there. Okay.
Yeah.
what was supposed to happen. So one of the people who knew me back when, I'm not sure if he remembers me, because it was a while ago that I was secretary of the law committee when he was on it, and I admired him greatly. Also, I took the position from his son-in-law, so after he graduated, is Arnie Goodman, who was the president of the rabbinical assembly when JTS voted to admit women to the rabbinical school. Always very supportive. Back in the early 1950s, women were reading Torah in his shul. And it was egalitarian. And before we were ordaining women here at JTS, he approached, can I say who? One of our colleagues, Jan Kaufman, who had already been ordained at the at HUC. In 1983, he was asked her, do you want to be my assistant in Atlanta? He was ready for that. It's 1983. We weren't ordaining yet here. We didn't even have the vote yet. Or we were in the discussion.
Not when he called.
Not when he called her was the vote, had we voted yet. Arnie saw the way, saw the light, and we thank you for that. And as one of our historians here this evening, I give you the mic.
It's really a joy to be here, and I sort of tried to invite my... Oh, very good. Okay, now it's like show business. I really tried to invite myself onto this program. Right? Because I felt that the ordination of women was a very significant event in the conservative movement, and it was a real paradigm shift at the time. We're here to celebrate 30 years of ordination or acceptance of the seminary of women. It's a long story, and not interested in a historical account, lest I lapse into anecdotage. So let me say that I'm delighted if I had any role in any way and having moved the chains, as they say in that sport of violence, having moved the chains, I take pride in it. And I look about and I know that this shift has had a tremendous impact, not only upon the women who have chosen the rabbinate as a career, but upon our movement, upon the American Jewish community, and really has had an impact on the Orthodox world as well, in terms of women pushing to study, to learn more. And I think what happened here had an impact there, and a very positive one. And living in Israel, I can say, I see the impact of egalitarianism, quasi sort of, even in the Orthodox shul that which I daven, which is called the Gush Minyan. It's another story. But I think when we celebrate this very important occasion, you ought, of course, to reflect for a moment on some of the forces that made it possible. And firstly, I think we ought to recognize the role of the seminary, and of Ziegler as well, in opening the doors to women. It was, certainly, I'm aware of the struggle here in the seminary, of the Tucker Commission's table, the findings, and how it was elevated very quickly as a result of the work of the RA. About that in a moment. But once women were accepted and became part of the seminary student body and moved out into the field, one has to be in admiration of you women who are of the first graduates, the first ordainees, who found it very difficult to find acceptance. And yet you bugged on, and you now look about to see a younger and younger generation of women who follow you. I know that you blazed the path for them. And for this, I think all of us should say, Toda Rabba. It's no coincidence, as I said that I made eye contact with Amy Albert. Secondly, I think we have to recognize the role of the Rabbinical Assembly. The RA was a catalyst in making this happen. I saw Beverly Magnuson. Her name dominated two conventions of the Rabbinical Assembly. And partially due to the pushing and the effort of two colleagues of blessed memory, I think when the process moved along, one was Fischel Perlmutter of Oliver Sholem. Know that he was very, very dedicated to this principle of women being accepted as rabbis. And he pushed through some of the first resolutions, which ultimately led to the commission, which was tabled. Now, one of the ways it came off the table is that Wolf Kellman, Oliver Sholem, was committed. He was the candidacy of Beverly Magnuson. And while she failed to get the 75% required, came to 71 and 83 and 74 and 84, and Gersinger and Oliver Sholem understood the time had come to take the resolution, the recommendations of the Tucker Commission off the table, and it happened the following October. So the RA has been a catalyst, and I think we can take, members of the RA can feel very, very good about, after passionate and hot debates, a lot of kishka on the table by a lot of people, what was right came to be, and we're here this evening. Now, what happened with the ordination of women is essentially a paradigm shift. And if we in the RA thought that we were through with issues that were hotly debated, down the road very quickly came what we called the gay issue. And I can tell you, having sat on the law committee and following what happened later on, we know that ultimately that was also decided, and it too was a paradigm shift. But again, after a lot of soul searching, a lot of hot debate, of people feeling very strongly both sides of the issue, but again, what is right ultimately takes precedence. As Oliver Sholem said in one of our conventions in Los Angeles, there is a moral issue that somehow or another has to be the template upon which halakha rests. And now that I've talked about paradigm shifts, let me just reflect for a moment that we're not through with the struggle of paradigm shifts. You know as I know, but you who are in the field know it far more than I feel it, that there is a movement today toward what we call interfaith unions, interfaith marriages, where there is no conversion of the person, partner-born Gentile. And the question ultimately is, what do we do with such unions? How do we recognize it? How do we deal with it? Do we ultimately reach a point where we find some form of sanctification of this union? How do we as rabbis, or you as rabbis, deal with the fact that the Rabbinical Assembly at this point has said, we don't do this? I would suspect that as comfortable as we may be without having to deal with another paradigm shift, that this is going to come down the road. And when it does, you're going to schwitz, you're going to debate, more kish will be on the table, and ultimately, what will be right will be decided. And all I can say, that from the vantage point of Jerusalem where I now reside, I will see all of this unfold, and I will say, thank God, I am retired.
To speak with you this evening. I also want to acknowledge the presence here of somebody I went to HUC with, Rabbi Kathy Felix. She wasn't ordained with me, but she's also known as the other half of Elliot Schoenberg. I guess I should hold this. But Kathy did start out in my class and then spent an extra year in Israel, so it was all to the good. And Rabbi Jackie Ellenson, who is... who's head of the WRN, and our Rosh Chodesh group is well represented here. So Jackie and Francine and Letty and Blue and I, we've been in a Rosh Chodesh group for decades. The women's courtyard had four chambers in its four corners, each 40 amot, and the chambers did not have a roof. And this is the way it will be in the third temple, the Mishnah teaches us. And what were these chambers used for? The southeastern corner was the chamber of the Nazirim. The northeastern chamber was where the Kohanim would check the wood for worms. The southwestern corner, according to Abba Shaul, was used to store the wine and oil. The wall around the women's courtyard was originally smooth, but later a balcony was built around it so the women could watch from above with the men who were below so they would not intermingle during the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, or even on Sukkot, to prevent Kalut Rosh. And I think in this company, I don't have to tell you what Kalut Rosh is, but sometimes it's not such a savory meaning. The Ezrat Nashim was a busy place. Everyone had to enter through it to get to the temple. It was the entryway for the court of the Israelites, and then the Kohanim would ascend even further. What Ezrat Nashim meant was the women could go no further, but everyone mingled there, as you can see from what the Mishnah just taught us. They had to build a balcony to prevent Kalut Rosh. There are some discussions of the Ezrat Nashim in the Gemara of Sukkot, but almost no mention of the separation between men and women until the religious reformers of the 19th century tore down the Mechitza. Afterwards, there were teshuvot making clear that a separation was required. Ezrat Nashim often became the moniker for women's organizations in the old country, especially what we know of as a gemach, gemilut chasadim. They organized to perform acts of chesed. Ezrat Nashim organizations existed from London to Buenos Aires, and there is even a psychiatric hospital in Israel called Ezrat Nashim. We know there was no going back after the Bastille was stormed. It was our Ezrat Nashim who stormed the barricades in 1972. At the 1972 RA convention, they presented the rabbis with their manifesto, a very 1970s word for change. Denied a platform for their message, they succeeded in having their manifesto distributed at the Concord. They worked tirelessly for over a decade to make it possible for women to enter rabbinical school on these very grounds. I would like to acknowledge those who joined us earlier today, who are members of Ezrat Nashim: Dina Rosenfeld, Judith Meyerowitz-Tischler, Elaine Chisholm-Cohn, Flora Davidson, Toby Reifman, Elizabeth Colton, who is a colleague of the sister-in-law of our colleague Stu Kelman, and I didn't see Toby Brandreth, she was supposed to have been here, whose mother was memorialized today, and JTS professors Ann Lapidus Lerner and Judy Hauptman, who is now an RA member. Whom I have to thank for some of the ideas and texts for this Devar Torah. I could stand here for a very long time and thank the list of people. All the presidents of the RA, when Beverly and I were going through this process, the membership committee that was chaired first by Rabbi Ludwig Nadelman and then by Rabbi Bill LeBeau when Beverly and I were admitted, Joe Myers, who hired the first full-time woman to work for a rabbinic organization, Julie, who serves as a model for many of us. And we remember, where's Ann?
Ann Lerner.
We remember Dr. Paula Hyman, Ann's very close friend, childhood friend, professor of Jewish history at Yale, who spent many years teaching at JTS in Columbia and served as undergraduate dean in this very institution. She staked her academic career, and David knows this better than anyone else, on the cause when she published The Jewish Woman in America.
And thank you for everything, always. You're missed, but you're always a phone call away. And at this time, And at this time, I'd like to call upon the first woman who served as president of the Rabbinical Assembly, Gila Dror.
Short, sweet, and to the point, but I do have, I'm very honored to have been asked to do the presentations tonight on this occasion. 30 years, 30 shana. I add my mazel tov and blessings to those who have already spoken. Zehayom asad onai nagila v'nismechavo. We learn in Pirkei Avot a suggestion that for an individual, 30 shana is a time of koach, a time of strength. We learn ben shloshim lakoach. And where did they get the idea that shloshim was koach? For us as a people, shloshim shana harkens back to stories in the Tanakh. Joseph was 30 years old when he became Pharaoh's second in command. The Kohanim served in the temple, in the tabernacle, from the age of 30. David became King David when he was 30 years old. And the Levites were counted from age 30. If there's a feminine reference in the Tanakh to 30 shana that's connected with Koach, I have not found it yet. But I'm looking. And if not, I'm going to write a piece about it myself. 30 shana is significant in that it does not only denote the acquisition of strength, It also reflects the challenges that have been experienced and the ongoing process of moving closer and closer to the realization of the fullness of the blessing in our shared vision. Commenting on the verse in Bereshit, Vayechi Peleg, Shloshim Shana, Vayoled et Re'ut, Shimshon Raphael Hirsch notes that the Shoresh Peleg points to Machloket Chevratit, Velo Rak, Machloket Mechanit. Machloket Chevratit. It points to significant communal discord. These 30 years have been fueled by the extraordinary vision of great women and men, but there has also been a lot of turmoil and deep-seated disagreements that have marked these 30 years. But we're here, and we are celebrating. We are so much stronger than we were 30 years ago. Look at what has been achieved. So many of us have been privileged to become rabbis and to serve in so many different capacities and areas of Jewish life and service. It is astounding. The blessing that I offer on this most special occasion is that after 30 years of vision and of visioning, in which we have experienced significant pilug, significant communal and personal turmoil, and deep-seated disagreements, that the vision of these extraordinary women and men that have led to our celebration be experienced with a great and lasting sense of re'ut, of closeness to God, of closeness to Torah, of closeness to the people Israel and to one another. As we read in Bereshit, Vayechi Peleg, Shloshim Shana, Vayoled et Re'ut, it is with a tremendous sense of honor and with a great sense of Re'ut that I call upon our trailblazing rabbis to come up one at a time to be recognized for their tremendous courage, determination, and vision, and to receive the RA's gift in recognition of all of that went into this great day. I now call upon Rabbi Amy Eilberg.
A tree with fruits, and because this is New York, there's a squirrel in the bottom left. And it says celebrating the 30th anniversary of the ordination of women.
By Nina Bieber Feinstein.
I think you look great with the glasses. so it's out of the way of their picture.
The powers that be, who are greater than I, have thought that we will do one group photo at the end. So I now mention the name of Rabbi Toba August, who could not be with us here tonight, but she is the next one. And I invite Rabbi Carolyn Braun.
Thank you.
Rabbi Jonina Scoff Pritzker could not be with us today, but we recognize her. And now, Rabbi Beverly Magidson. Rabbi Jan Carol Kaufman. Rabbi Avis Miller. Rabbi Leslie Alexander could not be here today. We recognize her.
She's somewhere. She's like in Europe.
Rabbi Julie Gordon. We're staying here because our MC has more to tell us. Please be seated.
Benching? Okay. Before everyone who just
first women in the rabbinical assembly just got their presentations, please don't leave so we can take a picture over there. And at this time, Marion Chulovitz will be leading us in benching.
She was here a minute ago.
And then afterwards, you're invited for dessert. And after that, Ina will be leading us in firing. Here. So.
I'm sorry. She said you're here.
We still talk every bit as much as we ever did, don't we? We do this better. So before we do the Birkat, I was asked to do a brief kavanah that I somehow had to connect to the Birkat, to what's going on today, the parsha probably, and a few other things. I did my best. Anyway, this evening, as I think we've sort of figured out, in fact, this whole day, is a very special occasion as we honor the Chavutzot, and I count myself as a Chavutza. Since I never made it to Israel, which when I was the age of 8, I was sure I was going to go and be a Chavutza in one of those wonderful pictures. This is the closest I'm going to get. The women, the Chavutzot, who were the pioneers in the rabbinical school of JTS, and the pioneers as rabbis, women rabbis in the conservative movement. In this parsha that we're going to be reading this Shabbat, we're going to read Kadoshim to you, Ki Kadosh Ani Adonai Eloheichem. I certainly don't plan to translate that for my colleagues or most of the people here, but just in case there's someone here, maybe like Abby, who didn't have the opportunity for a proper Jewish education, I'll translate. You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And the rabbis tell us that this refers to all the people of Israel, because we are called Mamlechet Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh. But in next week's Sedra, the Parsha Emor, which I know fairly well because two of my 5 grandchildren have already been bar mitzvahed on that Parsha, we read, V'kidashto et lechem Elohecha, who, Vikidashto, I'm sorry, he had Lechem Aoheka, whom I grieve. You must treat them as holy, for they offer the food of your God. And here the Torah is not referring to the Mamlecha Kohanim B'Goy Kadosh, but to the Kohanim specifically. In our modern day world, the Kohanim are here represented by the rabbis, us. It took many years before these women whom we honor tonight, the Chalutzot, who were ordained by the Jewish Theological Seminary, the flagship institution of our movement, and were accepted into the Rabbinical Assembly. But it took many years before they recorded the Kedusha, the honor and the respect they deserve. And one of the successes that we celebrate here tonight is that, by and large, not 100%, not saying there is a long way to go, but by and large, women in the rabbinate are indeed accepted by their colleagues, by their congregants, by their co-workers, because, like all rabbis, they offer the food of your God. And now let us thank and bless God for the food which God has provided us this evening. And so please join me in the Birkat HaMazon.